All right, start off. Atem nitzavim ayom kuchem lefnei Hashem alokechem. Here, you guys can grab one. Atem nitzavim ayom kuchem lefnei Hashem alokechem. You guys are standing here today, all of you, in front of Hashem, your God. Roshechem, shivtechem, ziknechem, v'shotrechem, kol ish Yisrael. You know what? I might as well go through all of them. Tapchem, neshechem, megircha, asher bekerem, machanechem, echoti, vetzecha, shovim, memecha. 10 people are mentioned over here. The guys who were in charge, the shivtechem, the shvatim, I guess you can call them, the zakenim, the shotrim, the officers, kol ish Yisrael, all the Jews that are around, your children, your wives, the gerim that are in the midst of your camps, the wood choppers, and the water carriers. What's up with mentioning all 10 of them? We'll get to that in a second. Number two, why are tapchem mentioned before the woman, the children before the woman? And it's a strange little thing over here, but it's even more accentuated because in Parshas Vayelech, when we go through the mitzvah of Hakel, there's a mitzvah in which we're supposed to gather after Sukkot, in which the king is supposed to read over the Parshas of Devarim. It says these psukim, and it says when it quotes down that you should bring everybody, vote kol Yisrael, everybody comes. It says Hakel is on ha'anoshim v'hanoshim v'atav. So it mentions the woman before the babies. So why in one place does it say the kids before the woman, but over here it seems to say the woman before the men? What's the difference between Hakel, which we're talking about in Vayelech, and over here in Nitzavim, where Kadosh Baruch Hu Moshe Rabbeinu is gathering everybody together and saying, all right, guys, stand here together. I'm going to tell you guys what you're supposed to do right before I die. What's the difference between the two? Over here, it seems to be both of them are sivuiz of Hashem. It's not like Moshe Rabbeinu just decided to put the kids in between. So what happened in between that one is different from the other? So there's a Chassam Sofer, and the Chassam Sofer is going to lead us to a bunch of things. This is going to be a little shir, a little like a mini shir on Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah has that whole thing. We all know he was 18, turned into 70. I'm not going to go into that part today, but I probably could add on a little bit of it. But over here, there's problems with this. There's problems with stockless.
Were the women... this is the point where he's... redoing the Har Sinai with the people?
Not now. That was in the beginning of Parshas Devarim, and it doesn't specifically mention women or children being there. This is when the women or children are there because Moshe Rabbeinu was about to die. This is like Vav Adar. Vav Adar or Zion Adar.
But isn't he doing the treaty?
He's doing like the bris all over again. Yeah.
So, but the women were at Har Sinai, right? The women didn't die.
100%. Oh, the women haven't died yet. Yeah, that's 100% true.
All the other people died, so the women had never died.
Yeah, 100% true. That's true. None of the women died according to the Amloes.
Women are the only people.
They're last.
No.
That's why you don't.
They're last because they weren't there at the time. But when what about? Did he have to ask what about the Gerim?
And the people who were older.
And the people who were older. Zakenim are before them. That's right. Zakenim are there. So the Zakenim definitely were there at that time. So why are we mentioning them over here also? That could be a good answer, but it still won't explain. Maybe. Okay, we'd have to work on something like that. But here, there is an answer. There's a chashash of hystakos, meaning what they're afraid of is that the men are going to start looking at the woman, that they're going to start staring at the woman. Now, normally, the problem exists in almost every situation, except for in the Beis HaMikdash. The reason why it doesn't apply in the Beis HaMikdash is because we're not afraid that if they're in a place that's that holy, with that many holy things around, when they're doing something that's that holy, and we know Kohanim is Zrizim Hain, they have this idea of being Zrizim, that they're all into the Avodah and not looking at anything else. Because of that, we're not afraid of having that type of a stumbling block. But here, where they're just sitting in front of Moshe, and Moshe Rabbeinu is giving them something to do and telling them, okay, this is what you're supposed to do. Here we're afraid. Maybe the men are going to start staring at the woman. So what Moshe Rabbeinu did was he put the tapchem, or Hashem, made sure that the babies were in between. It was the men standing first, then there was like a baby buffer in between the two. That's a cute little phrase that I just made up right now. And then after that came the woman. So that the men wouldn't be able to stare at the woman. And I realized, okay, but the kids were much smaller than the woman. Look, Yosef stood in front of his mother just to keep him away from Esau. So that idea, that concept exists, even if it's a little kid, it's still somewhat of a separation, so they wouldn't be able to mix in with the woman themselves. But in Hakel, we're not worried about that. When it's Hakel, it's such a holy place that we're not worried about anything around there. Think about it. We just have little kids that are sitting there, and even if we're not even afraid that they'll scream out loud. We're not afraid that they're going to cry. We're not afraid of any of that. The mitzvah of Hakel is just to be there, not to do anything else, that we're not afraid of the men mixing in with the woman. Because it's such a holy place, such a holy time, right after Sukkot, right after you did all the Kapar and Yom Kippur and everything like that, we're not afraid of that sort of a thing happen. So why do you bring the kids at Hakel? Why bother bringing kids? Over here I can understand you bring the kids because it's got to be in between. It's got to be a buffer zone. But by Hakel, why do you bother bringing the kids? Says the Chassam Sofer, quotes the Gemara Chagiga and Daf Gimel Amud Aleph that Omer Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah Taf Lamehim Boin. Why did the Tapim come? Why did the babies come? He says Lahavi Schar LeMeviyehem, to give schar to those who bring them. to give reward to those people bringing them. So the adults that bring over those kids, they get schar for that. Now that doesn't make any sense. Are you allowed to bring kids to shul in order to get schar for bringing them there? It's a big machlokas rishonim. Tosu says we learn from over here that you can take a kid to shul. What?
Is there any chinuch aspect in that?
There might be a chinuch aspect. That's what Tosu says. Tosu says from here we see that there's a chinuch aspect that you should bring them to shul. You should bring them to shul every time. Rishonim argue. The Rif says absolutely not. Never bring them to shul. They only disturb and they run and they this and whatever. You're teaching them how to eat in shul. You're teaching them how to do this in shul and everything. He goes through a whole thing. You can never bring kids to shul. Tosu says you could. There's other rishonim. The Rush, I believe, also says you could. And they learn it out from that gemara over there. What's going on over here that all of a sudden it comes from this idea of Rabbi Yosef and Azariah that he says to go ahead and maybe schar. What's the schar that you're getting for them? On that gemara, Rabbi Yeshua heard Rabbi Yosef and Azariah say that. He turned to the people who told him that, and he said to them, you tried to make me lose that pearl of wisdom. There was a pearl of wisdom that Rabbi Yosef and Azariah said, and you tried to make me lose that. How could you not have told me that before? And then he says out loud, the door is no longer orphans because Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is here, which number one is the strangest thing. What does that have to do with orphanism? And number two, and an ism you can add onto any word and make it into a word. Number two, he says, Ashrecha Avram Avinu, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Nechalatzecha. I don't understand. What in the world does Avram Avinu have to do with this? And praiseworthy are you that he's one of your kids. What does Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah have to do with anything? So what's Pshat over here? How do you understand Pshat over here? So normally, there is an idea of Hirhor. But Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is the one that darshans over there. By Hakil, you're not going to have a problem of Hirhor. Now, Ein Hachanami is right after Yom Kippur. Ein Hachanami is right after Sukkot. Ein Hachanami is in a holy place and everything like that. But that means Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is making a huge, huge chiddush. He's saying, the kids that you're bringing are not going to be put in between the men and the woman. That's a massive chiddush. Because maybe it should be the same thing as over here. Maybe the kids are only brought to be a buffer zone. How do you know that they're coming for schar, to get schar and everything like that? Maybe they're coming to be that buffer zone. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, no. I'll tell you what Pshat is. Pshat is they're there just to give you schar. What's the schar? That even though God isn't commanding you to put the kids in as a buffer zone, still, they put the kids in as a buffer zone. They got schar for separating themselves from the woman even though they didn't need to. So they put them in between even though they weren't commanded to. Moshe says you can bring them in and just put them behind the woman. Don't worry about anything. Everything will be okay. They took the kids and they put them in front of them so that they would have that buffer zone, and they got schar for that so they wouldn't mix in with the woman. So that there would be a separation between them and the woman. Call it the first mechitza. The first mechitza was little kids. Maybe that's the reason why a mechitza doesn't have to be the entire height of a person. It only has to be the height of maybe 44 inches, 50 inches, whatever it is. The size of like a kid. The size of a little kid, because that's all you need. That's what the kids are coming there for. It's to give you schar to separate away from the woman. Again, that's just a smach, but that's not the real idea behind it. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is that special a person. First, he said, Ein Ador Yosom. You know why? Because that means you're a Talmud of Avram Avinu. What was Avram Avinu like? He didn't even look at his wife. Wouldn't even look at his wife. Didn't even know what she looked like until he accidentally saw a reflection in the middle of a lake, in the middle of a river. It's the first time he ever saw his wife. That type of a person who didn't want to stay anywhere near his wife. Now, obviously, it's not for us to do. But that type of a person who wanted to make that buffer zone so he wouldn't have those taivas and he wouldn't be anywhere near his wife or have those types of things. That means that type of a person was brought down to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. So it's like, number one, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is copying what his great-great-great-great-grandfather Avraham Avinu was doing. So, number one, Ein Ador Yosom. Because when you copy your grandfather, it's like he's still alive. His laws are still here. It's like he himself is still here. And if he's still here, it's like Ein Ador Yosom. The generation is no longer orphans because Avraham Avinu is still around. It's like he's still around. That's number one. Number two, Ashrecha Avraham Avinu, that this guy, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, is coming out from your loins. That he's following in your footsteps and doing exactly what you're doing. That he assumes that everybody's going to be able to be careful on their own. And yet still, they've used it as a buffer. They were that holy. They wanted to make a buffer in between themselves even though they didn't need that. That's number one. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is also known as a 10th generation from Ezra. It's a big machlokes where that all comes from. I think it's based on a Gemara and Sukkah and Daf Chav Chas. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is supposed to be 10th generation from Ezra. It's also mentioned in Brachos, actually, in Chav Zayin, when it goes to the whole thing where Elazar ben Azariah took over for Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Gamliel got taken down, so they said, who's going to be the next Rosh Hashiva? They said, Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Yeshua was a Baal Dabava. He was arguing with Rabbi Gamliel. He can't be. Rabbi Kiva is a Ben Gerin. He has no schus, you know, he's got no Yerusha. He's got no schus avos. So they said, okay, we'll make Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah because he's 10th generation from Ezra Sofer. Now, it says right there, Ene Damian L'Einav. the eyes of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah are similar to the eyes of Ezra Sofer. Now we can understand that as, again, being as like a buffer zone and everything like that, but I found this year a Mesha Chachma that gives a different type of avort that goes into it a little bit better. In Vayelech, there's Perek Lamed Aleph Pasuk Tes. The Pasuk says Vayichto Moshe as a Torah Azos. Moshe wrote down the entire Torah. It's a Pasuk you brought up to me today. Moshe wrote down the entire Torah. Vayitna LaKohanim B'nei Levi. He gives it to Kohanim, the sons of Levi. I know some of Aron Bris Hashem Vel Kozik Neisrael that carry the Aron of the Bris of Hashem and to all the Zakenim of Yisrael. It's Machlokas. The Rush and the Das Zakenim both say that he wrote up 13 Sifrei Torah on that day. They quote a Medrash Rabbah. It's also quoted down by the Yakruvini, Yakushimoni. They all say it. They wrote up 13 Sifrei Torah on that day. And have a whole big thing about that how was he able to write 13 Sifrei Torah on that day? It was Shabbos. The Rush proves from there that Moshe Rabbeinu must have died on Friday. Says everybody else, have you ever tried writing 13 Sifrei Torah in one day? It's not exactly posh. It's not posh of shot. Somebody once told me, you maybe have 13 pens in one hand. No one can write with 13 pens in one hand. It's an impossibility to begin with. The fact that he was able to do it doesn't prove that it's not on Shabbos. I'm sorry? You can write half a Torah. It doesn't write 13 Sifrei Torah in one day. You wrote with Eish Shachor Al Eish Lavan. And we're like, oh yeah, that proves it wasn't a Shabbos. I don't understand what the Havamin of the Rush is. Can't be. So regardless, he wrote the Torah down on that day and he gave it to the Kohanim B'nai Levi. Says the Meshech Chachma, the original plan for the Torah to be given was only to be given to the greatest people of the generation. They would have the Torah Shebichsav and they would be the only ones who knew how to lane. They would be the only ones who knew how to read the Torah. They would be the only ones to do anything. And they would live in Yerushalayim because the Kohanim Levim had to be in Yerushalayim for the Shira, for, you know, to do the Shiras and whatever it is, and also to go ahead and do the Avodah. Yes, they had to go in the Ari Miklat also, so they'd be spread out, but they always have to come in and whatever it is. But those Kohanim would be the people who own the Torah. If you wanted to learn Torah, you had to go to Yerushalayim. You couldn't just sit in your city. There were no teachers in your city. You had to go to Yerushalayim to go learn. That's Rabbi Elazar ben Horkanis in the beginning of the whole Sefer of Pirkei to Rabbi Eliezer. Talks about Rabbi Elazar ben Horkanis going to Yerushalayim to go learn Torah. He couldn't learn it anywhere else. Rabbi Elazar ben Horkanis told his father, I want to learn Torah. His father said, no, just sit here and do business. Your sons will go learn Torah, but you yourself won't. And he had to go to Yerushalayim to go learn Torah. That was the original plan for Torah to be given, that was only going to be given over to them. Obviously, that didn't work out. Why? Because Ezra saw that people were spreading out too far. And there were no Kohanim or Levim were able to get out that far. And if this kept happening, then people were going to forget the Torah altogether. So what he said was, let's make it more accessible. Instead of being Ksav Ivri, they wrote it in Ksav Ashuris. They wrote in the letter, black lettering that we have today. Instead of Ksav Ivri, which is not exactly Rashi lettering, but a more confusing Ksav, more confusing style that they didn't use back then. So he said, let's make it more accessible and we'll make it available for people. And even though people are going to be sitting there in all the places, they're going to think like, oh, I learned the Torah, I'm a Talmud Chacham, I can do whatever I want over here. I didn't have a Rebbe, but I learned it by myself. He said, we'll deal with that. But I'd rather them at least know what the mitzvahs are rather than not knowing at all. Otherwise, they're just going to be complete Ami Aratzim for the rest of their lives because they're never going to go to Yerushalayim to go get this. They're in bubble. They're in China. There's no way they're going to come all the way to Yerushalayim. So he's willing to go in and do that in order for people to be around there. That exact same idea was taken by Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. When Rabbi Gamliel got taken down, Rabbi Gamliel had a rule. Anybody who came to Yeshiva and Yavne had to be Toko Kibaro, meaning his inside had to be exactly like his outside. His innards, the way he treated everybody else, had to be exactly what he looked like on the outside. If he wasn't a Talmud Chacham through and through, a total, complete, unbelievable person, he wasn't allowed to learn Torah. They said, get out of here, we don't want you in here. We don't want you in our Yeshiva. And they wouldn't allow him into the Beis Medrash. Everybody knows that story about Hillel, that Hillel had to get in, he needed a coin to get into the Beis Medrash. He couldn't, so he put his ear up there and whatever, he tried to listen and he froze and there were three amos of snow that went on top of him. Finally they let him in the Beis Medrash. Mayan Avtal Yisrael, it was dark, they let him inside. Why would you charge to bring a guy into a Beis Medrash? Every day you're going to charge that? Because again, the same type of idea. No, you have to deserve, you have to earn the right to come into this Beis Medrash. If you don't earn that right, then you don't get it. Hillel earned that right. Once he went up there, they're like, okay, this guy's a freak. We got to let him inside or else look what he's going to do. He's going to freeze himself to death just to hear our Torah. Forget it. We'll take him and we'll bring him down inside here. But that's what the Torah was like up until Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah came in. Says the Gemara, when Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah came in, they added on 400 benches to the yeshiva. They added on, no longer was it Karen B'Yavneh. Things were all over the place. It was Karen B'Yavneh up until that point because there were rows and it looked like corn rows and everything. Then they just brought in chairs wherever and people started sitting wherever they could. And people started gathering around the Rebbe and started sitting around trying to get wherever they could in order to sit in front of the Rebbe. Why? Because Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah made it more accessible for everybody. He said, anybody who wants to come learn? Come on. Let's go. Let's go teach everybody. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was exactly like Ezra so far in that aspect that he wanted wanted to give it out to anybody. Avram Avinu was the same exact way. He wanted to make it accessible to everybody. Not just me. I don't want to be the only one who wants to learn Torah and to give it over to my kids. I want everyone to have this idea of giving it over to one person and the next person to that. So everybody gets this idea. That's what it means by Eine Domin Le'eno. That the eyes of Rabbi Yoel Hazman Azariah was exactly like the eyes of Ezra Sofer. Ayin is what's used Litzafos Lamerchok, to see far away, to see what's going to be in the future. He used his eyes and he looked into the future and he said, what's going to be with Klal Yisrael? Ezra Sofer did it, Avram Avinu did it, and Rabbi Yoel Hazman Azariah did it. And that's why he compares him to Ezra, and that's why he brings up, oh, he's compared to Ezra. And we see that also. That's why Rabbi Yoel Hazman Azariah always goes into reasons of things. If you go around, you'll see Rabbi Yoel Hazman Azariah explains himself better than any other Tana out there. Why would you bring the Taf? I'll tell you the Pshat. He goes into the Lama. He goes into the whys. So he can explain to you, this is why we do this. This is why we do that. That's what Rabbi Yoel Hazman Azariah was like. That's what he was like, and that's the type of a person he was. Somebody who was able to spread the Torah. That's the idea behind him. You can add that on into the whole thing of him being 18 and 70. You can add it on and make the whole thing of what type of a person he was. He spent so much time working on himself and working and working and working and trying to convince other people. At the age of 18, says the Rambam, he worked so hard, he became like he was 70. Then he just kept working and working and working on people, trying to convince them that everything was all right and trying to bring them in, no matter who they were and how far they were, and just grabbing them and pulling them in, that he was that type of a person, that he looked like he was 70. He was so old already, he started getting a white hair. Started getting white hairs all over his body or whatever it was. It was a natural thing, according to the Rambam, as opposed to stress-related, as opposed to a miracle, as everybody else says. The Rambam says it was somewhat more natural. Now, there's one people that's missing here. I said this over last year, but I think it's one of the best boards. It's such an important board to hear. We mentioned over here in the beginning of the 7, we have, again, the Rashechem, Shivtechem, Ziknechem, Shotrechem, Kol Ish Yisrael, Tapchem, Neshechem, Negircha, Asher Bekarav Machanechem, Echotiv Yitzachat, Shoiv Me'echa. Who's missing? Who's missing? One nation that's not mentioned. One nation that's not mentioned. Nistama orphans would be Kol Ish Yisrael. But
the Canaan.
Not the Canaan are mentioned.
No.
Canaan.
Yitro.
No, because they weren't involved yet. But the Erev Rav, Gircha, Shebekarav Machanecha might include the Yisro. But Erev Rav were never known as Gerim. Erev Rav were not added in as Gerim. They're always separate from Gerim. So the Miyam always asks the question, what happened to the Erev Rav? What happened to the Erev Rav? So unbelievable. First, the Miyam always says a crazy thing, that all the women survived up until this point. That not one woman died except for Miriam. She's the only woman to die during the entire 40 years of the desert. Now he gives another massive Chiddush. All 1.4, 1.6, 1.8 million. It's Machlokas and Mechilta, how many there were of the Erev Rav that came out of Mitzrayim, all of them died while they were in the desert. Throughout all the things that happened, all of them died. There's not one Erev Rav left. No one's left. So by the time they came into Israel, there's nobody left. There's nobody there from the Erev Rav. They're all gone. They're completely gone. I'm sorry, what were you going to say?
You never hear from them again?
You never hear from them again. They're not mentioned whatsoever. Even the is not mentioned anymore. There's no such thing as the anymore. Ha'am. It's only mentioned in Bamidbar. It's no longer in Parshat Devarim. There's nothing there, unless he's referring to the Erev Rav messing up, you know, whatever it is. But there's no more There's no more people that he's including within the Erev Rav. So what happened then? They all died. So I don't get it. We know the whole Medrash. Let's try to understand it now. Ramosh Rabbeinu sits there and he says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, should I accept these people or should I not accept these people? He did the exact same thing with Micha. Remember, Micha was a brick in the wall. He said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what are you doing? Why are you letting these kids die? And then he said the exact same thing regarding other things as well, regarding some of the Jews, Dasan and Aviram, that were about to die, about to be thrown into the river. He said, Kadosh Baruch Hu, why are you letting these kids be thrown into the river? Kadosh Baruch Hu said, by all three cases, trust me on this one, you don't want these people around. Trust me, you don't want to accept these guys as Gerim. Trust me, you want it to be a brick. You want this kid to die. Trust me, you don't want these guys that I'm about to throw into the river, you don't want them around. So, but he said at the end, but if you want to take them, go ahead. If Hashem told you that, you would take them? Don't do it. But alright, you can try me. Try my patience, see what you can do. Why would you take them? Why in the world did Moshe Rabbeinu take the Erev Rav? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu was right. Look what happened to them. They died after 40 years. Bashir Hashem, what do you mean? Like meaning take them as they are right now. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu obviously didn't want that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told them, don't do it. Don't take these guys. They're evil. Don't take them. If they all died in the desert because of all the crazy things they did, why in the world did this happen over here? It's already another question. Why didn't Bashir Hashem apply to them? There's issues behind Bashir Hashem. But what do you mean? What happened over here? The answer is like this. This is mine, but I think it's a simple way of looking at things. I always compared it to, since I was in Beis Yisrael for such a long time, Torah Moshe versus Beis Yisrael. You have two different ways of looking at things. I think you can go to a place where you surround yourself with Kedusha. Surround yourself with Kedusha. Meaning, you don't have any bad influences around you. You only have good influences around you. That way, it's very hard for you to knock yourself down. Because if you only have good influences around you, why would you turn bad? You're going to be influenced by those people to end up becoming a better person. But the other way of looking at it is, what happens then, and the downfall of that is, what happens then when you go up and meet up with those people from your past who are still bad? Are you going to go right back down again? Because you were always with good people. The good people were bringing you up. But as soon as you leave that circle, then what happens to you? Then you can get thrown down. However, there's another way of doing it. Another way of doing it is to surround yourself with people that are questionable. Seeing what they do and improve yourself because you're saying, I don't want to be like those people. I don't want to be like that. And then bring yourself up because of it, because you realize, look, I see these guys. That's not what I want to be. That's not what I want to do. I don't want to bring myself up because of that. The idea HaKadosh Baruch Hu told them was, I don't want Bnei Yisrael to have any outside influences around. Called the Haredi type idea. Deal within Mea Sharon. I don't want anyone else around. I want them to be surrounded by Kedusha, not have anything else around there, no outside influences whatsoever, and let them live that way so they won't be influenced at all. They're not going to do any bad. Says Moshe Rabbeinu, but there's a massive, massive thing that's going to happen. If they do sin, they'll have no one to blame it on. There'll be no blame for them to point to somebody else and be like, it's their fault. There's no one there for them to say they started it, or they did this, or they did that. If they end up sinning, it's going to be the worst sin in the world, and they're going to be punished tremendously because of it. However, if you give them a bad influence, it's possible that they're going to do bad. But they could learn from it and improve themselves because of it and bring themselves all the way up. So let's bring the Erev Rav in. Bnei Yisrael will learn from them and everything will be all good. Moshe Rabbeinu proves his side to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this week's Parsha. The Erev Rav are all gone. They're all gone. You guys that have survived are all in front of Hashem, your God. Everything is good by you guys. You guys brought yourselves up to this level because you saw what the Erev Rav were like and you didn't want to be with the Erev Rav. Sure, we lost some people because of it. You always have the risk of losing somebody with this type of a derech. But look at you now. Now one person here is a chait. Now one person here is something wrong with them. That was the idea behind it. We was willing to sacrifice, call it, some people in Bnei Yisrael in order for the greater good for Bnei Yisrael. That was the idea. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't want it. He, not because of Nevuah, but just because he was afraid of what was going to happen. Moshe Rabbeinu said, we're willing to take that risk. At least now, there's something to blame it on. And that's why Chazal say, there's a Medrash Rabbah that says, every chait that Bnei Yisrael did in the Midbar all started from the Erev Rav. So when these people go up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they say, it wasn't us, it was him. It was them. They started it. How can you blame me? It was them that started it. It was the Erev Rav that started it. Because of that, they have a taina to be able to get out of it. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu say, then why do you have to follow them? Why couldn't you be a leader? Okay, that's a taina, but still, it wasn't me. I didn't start it. They did the Eagles of. They were the ones who were the Meraglim. They started the Meraglim. They were the ones who did this. They were the ones who complained and did that, had the Taiva and everything like that. To that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, okay, I understand. So I'm not going to punish you as badly. That was the idea that Moshe Rabbeinu wanted. Number three. Shoresh Pora Rosh V'Lana. I'm not so sure I can explain this fully. I heard this story from an unbelievable person. And whatever. His name's Nelson Sherman. He quoted it down from a Rav with Teitelbaum in New York. I don't have all the details, and he never got me the phone number for a Teitelbaum, so I can't go through. So I'm not going to say who the Rishon is. But there was a Rishon. They all translate Shorash Pora Rosh V'Lana, that Pen Yesh Bachem Shorash Pora Rosh V'Lana, the Ramban and the Rekanti, they all say, if you have a little bit of wormwood inside you, if you have a little bit of bitterness inside you, then you go off the derech and you'll become an Ovid Avodah Zarah. But if there's not one thought of bitterness inside you, if you have no bitterness whatsoever, you're guaranteed that your kids will never go off the derech. That's a guarantee, says the Ramban. You have never had one bitter thought. Now, one bad thing about Bnei Yisrael, about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, don't worry, all your kids will stay on the derech. No matter what you do, you can screw them up as much as you want. They're always going to stay on the derech. That's what he says. But that's by this Pashuk, Shorash Pora Rosh V'Lana. So, I don't want to say who it is. There's a Rishon who had a kid that went off the derech. Everybody asked him, how could you have a kid that went off the derech? His kid became a Muslim. Muslim kid, whatever it is. So how could he have gone off the derech? He lives in Spain. And he had a Muslim kid. So what happened? So he explained that the pshat is that one time my wife was coming back from the mikvah. And obviously that she was right after Nida, so she was able to give birth. And a general in the king's army caught her and tried to rape her. Grabbed her and brought her over to the corner and tried raping her as she was coming back home. The woman grabbed, like, toward the end of the whole ordeal, obviously she was screaming the whole time, toward the end of the whole ordeal, bit down on the gloved hand of that general, took off part of the general's finger, put off part of the general's finger, and kept it inside her mouth. Kept it inside her mouth so the general wouldn't say it. The general said, like, crazy, obviously hit her as much as she can. She wanted to die, obviously. And then she went back home. She went back home to the Rishon and told the Rishon exactly what had just happened. That Rishon was a very powerful man in the government. He went straight up to the king the next day and he said, one of your generals did this. She said, do you have any identifiable marks? He said, I have part of the finger. I have part of the finger of that general. So he called in all his generals and he told all his generals to get inside. Every single one of them were able to, you know, he told all of them, put out your hands. Every single one of them put out their hands. Every single one of them was wearing regular hands, you know, without gloves or anything, except for one general who wouldn't take off his glove off one hand. The king said, take it off. He said, I can't. And they tore it off him. They realized he was missing part of the finger. They knew it was him. So there's a question what happened. Either he was executed or he was thrown out of the country because this region was a very, very powerful person. But regardless, the guy ended up losing whatever it was. The child, there was a child born from that relationship. That woman, his wife got pregnant. The child that was born ended up being this kid, and that kid went off. So said that Rishon, that doesn't apply to me. I never had a Shorash Poro Rosh Hashana. I've never had any bitterness against the Kadosh Baruch Hu whatsoever. However, it was straight out from that person, from that general, and that's the reason why this kid went off the derech. There's a Lushan in that Rishon, on this Pusik, that proves, that goes into this entire board, that he says, and don't ask on me, Valtitma B. Don't ask about me. What happened with me? He doesn't say it straight out, but he's like sort of hinting to it. I'll tell you my B. Don't ask about me. Why? What's up with my child? Don't ask, because that's not me. That's something else entirely. That seems to be the... What?
It wasn't his child at all.
Because it wasn't his child. That's the idea. I mean, it was, you know, sort of his child, but it wasn't his child that came out. That's the reason why that happened. It's an unbelievable thing. That's Shorash Poro Rosh Hashana. No, that's from Pasuk Yitzayin. Pasuk Avalov. I like this one also. It says, Amar Hadora Achron, B'nei Chashir Akum Achorechon. We can do a little bit of Pashup Shat in the Pesukim right now. The last door, the final door that'll come up, your children that come up after you, V'anochri Asher Yavo Meretz Rechoka, and the Goy that comes from a faraway land, V'roz Makos Aretahiv as Tachlu Asher Chilu Hashem Ba. You'll see the great, crazy things that happened in the land, and all the great desecration that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did within it. V'anochri reminds me, this whole pasuk reminds me, a goy that comes into Eretz Yisrael, sees all the crazy things that happened, Gafris v'melach sreifa kol arsa, how the land is destroyed, losses rav losses smiach, won't grow anything, not even grass, k'ma pechas sedom v'amora admo, tzvoyim, the destruction of sedom and amora, etc. Sh'arav ha'Hashem v'apol v'chamas v'amu kol goyim, amel sa'Hashem kachal arat ezos. Why did Hashem do this to this land? Machori yafa gadol ozev, v'amor asher azu was gris Hashem, because they went up against God, etc., etc. Can you name me a famous writer who happened to have said that about the Jews? Mark Twain, right? His real name was?
Samuel Clemens.
Clemens is the exact same gematria as V'anochri. Again, little cute thing, right? Kuf Lamed Mem Nun Samach.
So it's Mishpah?
Boat 285. Don't know. I don't think Mark Twain ever gave a Hebrew name for himself. But I'll assume Clemens is 285, which is the same thing as V'anochri. That guy that comes around, Mark Twain comes along and says all this stuff.
C is 3, L is whatever.
No.
What? No,
he's
going
spelled in Hebrew.
Clemens, yeah. Either way, but that's the entire thing that he came by. He saw all this and he asked that question in his book and he said, what's going on with the Jews? How could it possibly be that they got this punishment? It says, Al Shah Ozbu Asprisi, right? So then the Pasuk says, in Pasuk Chav Zayin, he threw them away to another land like today, like this day. Now, Vayashlechem, the Lamed is huge. The Lamed is huge. And this is why I needed such a piece of paper. Because what's up with that extra big Lamed? So the Pashup Shad is like this. Rosh Hashem Rafal Hirsch says that the Lamed stands for why we're still around. If you take the word Vayashlechem and you spell it the way the Pasuk does, you take away the Lamed, it says V'yeshchem. You know why you still exist today? V'yeshchem. You know why you're still around today? You know why? Because of Lamed. Because of the Limud HaTorah. The only reason why you're still around is because of the limud haTorah that you guys have done up until now. Because you've learned, therefore everything's been okay. But without that learning, you guys are absolutely nothing. You're right. You have had absolutely nothing within your lives. The only reason why we're still around is because of that learning. That's what he says. But where are we thrown? To a place that's V'yeshchem. V'yeshchem, we're just going to do a couple more gematrias over here. It's gematria 376. Same gematria as Esav. Exact same gematria as Esav. We're thrown away to Esav. We're turned over to Esav because we know Yadayim Yidei Esav, only the hands of Esav, only when Hakol is not Kol Yaakov. If Hakol Kol Yaakov, then Yadayim are not Yidei Esav. But if it's Hakol, if Hakol is not Kol Yaakov, then Yadayim Yidei Esav. That's how it goes. That's the idea behind Esav over here. Now to bring it on, Esav is also known as what animal? What animal is he known as? Not a sheep. He's known as what? What kind of an animal was Esav? What?
Ox.
Not an ox. Not an ox. It's known as? You just said it. The chazir. Why is it called a chazir? Because it would be chozer to us, loss of level. Says the Ritvam, Mem Tesum Abezin Kedushin. The reason why a pig is called chozer is because it's going to be chozer to us, loss of level. He says it's in pshat. Yes, the pig will be kosher eventually, and we talked about that before. Not only that, the pig, referring to Esav, will come back to us, loss of level. That Esav will come back to us and be on our side. Name me a country that's on our side right now. United States of America. Oh my gosh, do I love this for it. So, Alamed. It's like that, right? It's like that. If you look at another type of Alamed, there's two different types within the Torah. The other type of Alamed is... If anybody wants to look at this and not tell me that this doesn't look like South America, Central America, and North America with a little Canada thing over here, I would be shocked to not hear that. The two lamids put together, one on top of the other, refer to America. And the lamid that it refers to, and that's why the lamid is big. It's a big lamid to tell you that it's that lamid that we're talking about. If you look in the Torah, usually that big lamid is shaped like that. But the regular lamid should be shaped upward. But it's usually shaped like that because it's got to fit within the line. It still has to fit within the line that it's put inside. So usually it's shaped like that in order to get inside there. The idea behind those lamids is that we're going over to a place that's America, and the reason why it's called Esav, and I mean, this is the place of Esav, but aside from that, America happens to be the exact same gematria as 376. You can go check that up a little bit later. But K-America is exactly the same gematria as 376. And aside from all that, to go a little bit crazier, because why not, you know? So when we do that, it says Kayomazeh, on a day like today, right? On a day like today means on a day in which you're being punished, in which everything is all sulfur, and all the Jews are being punished and thrown out. They're being kicked out of the land and everything. The day that they found America was August 2nd. August 3rd is when Columbus sailed, 1492. What's my August 2nd or August 3rd? August 2nd and August 3rd were both the days that Columbus sailed for America and the day of the beginning of the Spanish Inquisition. Kayomazen, a day like today, you're going to go find that other place, the Eretz Acheres Kayomazen. That Eretz Acheres, the other land that's shaped like a lamed that's supposed to be referring to America. That only then was it down there. What happened with America? Why in the world was America separated from the rest of the land? Oh, I've got Shadim on that also, but we're not going to go through that right now. It's Dor Enosh. It's Dor Enosh, but we're not going into that right now, but that's the idea behind it. Yes?
July 4th, 1776, with Shabbat Shabbat Thomas.
July 4th, 1776 was Shabbos Vitamas. That's cute. Why? What's Pshat?
That was when the...
Declaration of Independence. So what?
So that's when they broke into the... that's when they broke in through the walls, right?
Yeah. Oh, that's cute.
And they broke through the walls. Democracy broke down the walls.
That's very cute. That's good. Good little addition over here. Now, we only have a little bit more time. I don't want to go into the whole... We do have a whole big thing about Nistatnu, Mayinus, Achachma, and everything like that. I like going into these two little things. First of all, Karez Yoshua, Parshas Vayelech. It says that he called over Yoshua and he brought him in. It says, "Vayomar Hashem Moshe, Hein Karvi Machlamus, you're about to die. Cross Yoshua, go call Yoshua. V'siyatu mi Ol Moed, go stand him up in the Ol Moed. By the tent of meeting, I want to go speak to him. V'atzavenu, I'll command him everything he needs to know. Vayelach Moshe v'Yeshua v'siyatu bo Ol Moed." Says the Gra, an unbelievable medrash happened over here. Yoshua was sent by Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu sent him over, and he said, "Okay, it's time for you to get a nevuah." Yoshua walked over to the Ol Moed, and the light shone down. You know, whatever you want. You know, like the Malachim singing from Shemayim, and like, you know, everything happening. Yeshua gets his nevuah and then comes back to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu immediately says to him, "What did Hashem tell you? What did Hashem just say to you?" And Yeshua says back to him, "All these years you've been the Rebbe and I've been the Talmud. Have I ever asked you what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to you?" Now that's chutzpah. That's major, major chutzpah. Yes, that's true. That Moshe's never been asked by Yoshua what. But Moshe Rabbeinu just asked, you know, and he's your Rebbe. Why not say to him what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said? What in the world is up with that medrash? And what was Yoshua thinking? Yoshua is that big of a Baal Gaiva that all of a sudden he's just like, yeah, I want to keep this to myself. You know, I was told great secrets. I'm not going to go into it right now. I don't want to say. What in the world is up with Yoshua? Says the Gra, that's what Hashem told him. The nevuah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to him was, this is what you should say to Moshe. All these years that I was the Talmud and you were the Rebbe, did I ever ask you what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to you? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew that Moshe Rabbeinu had a claim. I want to go in as a student of Yoshua. Let Yoshua be the leader. Let him be the king. Let me go in as Stalma guy. I don't have to die. I just want to go in as a regular guy. I'll go in as a regular Joe. Just walk inside and just be like, okay, whatever. Yoshua's the leader. I'm a nobody. I'm just a guy in the side. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is proving to him, you'll never want that. Every time Yeshua gets a nevuah, you're going to wish that it's you getting the nevuah. Every time Yeshua Yeshua has something to do, you're going to say, oh man, I wish I could go ahead and do that. It's a natural thing, Moshe. I mean, you've been a leader for 40 years of Bnei Yisrael. You've gotten Nevuah every day of your life. You've gotten this idea of where you're connected with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. You don't want to be under Yeshua. You're never going to want to be under Yeshua. So Yeshua was commanded, go back to Moshe and say to him this line. And when you say it to him, Moshe Rabbeinu said, Shoin, I understand. I'm not supposed to be. I'm not supposed to be under Yeshua. I can't do it. I won't be able to do it. He said, okay, fine. I give up. I'm not going to do that anymore. And he ended up dying and he went down. And that's what it means by Hein Korvi Yom HaChalamus. You're going to die. But wait, I don't want to die. I'll go in as a regular guy. Said HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you're going to want to die. You're going to want to die. You're not going to want to go in as a regular Talmud of Yeshua. You won't want to do that. That's the idea behind that. Next thing is, what's the Elohein Nechor Aretz? We have a pasuk over here that says, "Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, Hinei Shochem Avosecha, Hinei Kol Shochem Avosecha, you're going to die with your fathers." The Kama Amazev Zona Achrei Elohein Nechor Aretz. Then these people get up and stray after the gods, the strange gods of the land. Shirhu Bashama Bekirbo, which he comes among you. Vazavani, and he'll forsake me. Behefer is Brisia Shakrati Tov, and I'll forsake my bris that I have made with them. I can't believe I found this. This is just one of those crazy things that you find once in a while. You're just like, whoa. The Rabbeinu Ephraim says that he went to the Baal HaChalom, that he used to ask questions to the angel of dreams. I don't know if he meant that he asked somebody who asked the questions to the angel of dreams, or he himself did ask the angel of dreams. Some say it's Raziel HaMalach. Some say it's Gavriel HaMalach. But regardless, he asked the question of the angel of dreams, is Yeshu and his mother Miriam mentioned in the Torah? Meaning Mary, good old Mary, and good old Jesus, are they mentioned anywhere? Are they put somewhere in the Torah? So the Baal HaChalom answered him, and the way it's answered is, they give a little, you go to sleep that night with these thoughts on your head, and you ask it to the Baal HaChalom beforehand. I don't know exactly how you ask it. In the morning, you'll find a piece of paper underneath your pillow. I doubt it's like a little scrap. I think it's more like, you know,
yeah,
something
like
that comes
fairy.
Out from
Shemaya. You get a dollar from
Yeah, exactly. Except this time, it's got a little answer instead of a dollar. So Aww. The answer is put under your pillow, you pull out that thing from under the pillow, you look at it, and you get the answer that way. So he pulled out the answer, and the answer was Elohein Echar Haaretz. Elohein Echar Haaretz. So it says the Rabbeinu Ephraim, Elohein Echar Haaretz is the Gematria 612, which is the Gematria of Yeshu v'Miriam. Yeshu v'Miriam. It says that's where it comes from. It says Rabbeinu Ephraim. I'm adding on just a little bit to this. That's the Pshat behind the Pesukim. These people are going to get up, and they're going to stray after Elohein Echar Haaretz, which means Yeshu and Miriam. That's what you're going to go after. Hu bas shama bekirbo. He's going to come in among them and say, I'm just like you guys. I'm another Jew, just like you guys. I'm just with you. You know, 100% with you. Vazavani, and they're all going to forsake me. The hefer is brisya shakratito. They're going to say, the Jewish people no longer have the bris with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. The Jewish people are no longer going to be with Hashem. The real Kadosh Baruch Hu wants a brand new people, and it's only the people that go ahead and believe in him. Vacharapi bo bayom hu, I'm going to be angry. Vazavtim, I'm going to forsake them. Yistarti b'nai ma'am, and I'm going to take away my face from them. Vayilachol, and he's going to be destroyed. What ended up happening to Yeshu when he was hung up on the gallows? He was eaten by the birds of the sky. Settled by everything. Vahayalachol, he'll be eaten. So rose rabos, and crazy bad things happen to him. Vitzaros, and crazy pains. Va'omar bayomu, and he'll say on that day, hallo, alkien alokai v'kirvi mitzunia rosa eila. You know what he's going to say? He's going to use this as excuses. Instead of using it as like a lesson, where he should have said like, oh wow, Kadosh Baruch is really punishing me for all the crazy things that I'm doing. Instead, he'll look at everybody and he'll say, isn't it because God is with me and I'm taking the pain for God? I'm taking it for everybody else. Hallo ki ein alai bekirbi could also be read as, yes, God is in me. I am God, and I'm taking the pain for everybody else, and I'm the one who's losing it for everybody else. I'm the one who's taking it over for everybody else. And he'll use it as an excuse to get more followers. Wow, he's really killing himself for us. That's the idea behind it. They're going to go like that. And the next thing is, then I'm going to hide myself completely from all the evil that he did. I'm not even going to think about it. Because he went over to the other gods. He went over and decided to keep Avodah Zarah and decided to do Avodah Zarah. And that's why now you got to write up the Torah. You know why? Because the people at that time all of a sudden have to start writing down Torah Shebaal Peh and take it for themselves. Because the Torah Shebechsav is going to be taken by Yeshu. He's going to take it for himself and say, it's all my Torah, because I'm the one who's changing it around. And Bnei Yisrael at that point are going to have to decide, now it's time to write down the Torah Shebaal Peh. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi was only 100 years later. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi realized from that it's time to write down the Mishnayos. So that no longer will the Christians be able to have everything that we have. Now we can add on and we say, we also have this. We also have the Mishnayos. And that's when you got to write down the Shira Hazos. That's why it doesn't say a Torah, like it said up above when Moshe Rabbeinu wrote down the Torah. It says Ashira. Shira refers to the songs, making everything make sense, putting everything together. That's what it's referring to when it's referring to the Torah Shebaal Peh. Baal Peh with the Torah Shabbat Sabbath, and the Torah Shabbat Peh actually has to be written down. That's the idea behind it. The pshat behind Yeshu, and why Yeshu was so off, is because he always felt that God hated him. Always felt that God hated him. Always felt that our relationship is stale. And that was the whole thing with Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachya. We know he was a student of Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachya. Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachya, and he ran away to Egypt when all the Chachamim were being killed in Eretz Yisrael. Shimon ben Shetach called out and said, all right, guys, it's time for you to come back. Yeshua ben Prachya and Yeshu were walking back, and in an inn. They were by an inn. Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachya was being served by an innkeeper. And Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachya said, oh, this innkeeper is such a beautiful woman. And Yeshu said, what? She's not beautiful. She's got these weird-looking eyes. And Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachya said, you think that's what I was talking about? I wasn't talking about physical beauty. I mean, she's a beautiful person in Midos. She's a beautiful person in all types of Midos and everything. How could you have said that to me? And immediately threw Yeshu into Cheren. And Yeshu kept trying to come back. Yeshua ben Prachya would never accept him. Finally, Yeshua ben Prachya said, all right, it's time for me to re-accept Yeshu. Time for me to bring him back. Yeshu came inside. It was during Zman Kriya Shema. Immediately, Yeshua ben Prachya said, Shema Yisrael Shem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Yeshu didn't hear it. All he saw was Yeshua ben Prachya going like that. And he said, oh my gosh, he doesn't want me anymore. He won't even look at me.
Didn't he ask three times? He asked three times for...
And this is going to be the third time. He came by and he said, he won't even look at me anymore. He's not even going to stare at me. So he went around, says the Gemara, he went around according to the Gemara and Sotam Membav, and he started bowing down to a brick. Stood up a brick and bowed down to it. That was the idea behind it, because he thought, everybody's turning me away. Nobody wants me anymore. My relationship with Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachya went stale. My relationship with God went stale. Only he realized Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachya wanted to take him back. He was punishing him up until a point. But eventually he's going to bring him back. If only we'd realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was trying to give him these punishments in order for him to learn a lesson. Learn from this, Yeshu. See what I'm doing to you. So you know from now on that you should start working on yourself. That I'm giving you these punishments so that you get better. Instead, what did he do? He took it as like a riot. Look at me. I must be God. I don't even understand what type of a thought process went into that. Like, I'm God and I must be doing it for that. Yeah, you could say the Council of Nicaea was the one that came up with that idea in 345. I don't know. But the fact is, that's what comes out from these psukim that reverse the Yeshu over anything else. Our last word for today will be Hashira Hazos. There's a much, much better word than that also. What's the word behind calling the Torah a song? You can't. David HaMelech was punished for saying Zmiros Hayali Hukecha, that your laws are like songs to me, are Zmiros to me. You can't call them Zmiros. You got to call them a Shira. You got to call them a Shira, not a Zemer. What's the pshat? The idea is that there's a big difference between a Zemer and a Shira. A Zemer is just like a little song, a tune that you sing by yourself. A Shira is like an orchestra string singing with all these people around, where everybody comes together to make an unbelievable sound. The drums are not good on their own, but the drums with the whole percussion section, the violin by itself is not necessarily the greatest, but the violins along with the trumpets, and then you take everything else together, all these sounds, put them all together, all of a sudden it becomes a Shira. Then it becomes a full song, a full orchestra of everybody playing together. The Torah is also that type of an idea, where everything comes together at the end, where you realize everything and the purpose for everything only at the very, very end of the Torah, and then you get to start it all over again. You don't stop with Zosa Bracha and just say, like, all right, I'm done. I'm done with everything. You end it all, and you're like, oh, now I get it. Let me read it through again. I'll probably get it even better the next time around. The Shira is where everything comes together, and we know that every neshama of Klal Yisrael is supposed to be a letter in the Torah. Every neshama is supposed to be a letter. Every Jew is a connection with another Jew. Only when you see every Jew's life and put it together, you might think to yourself, I'm having a bad life. God hates me. There's no reason why I should be here. There's something wrong with me. There's this, there's that. You might think that all the time. It's not pshat. Because Baruch was saying every letter in the Torah goes together. Each thing goes together, and eventually it becomes a Shira, where you realize what your place in life is. Why you're here, why you're there, why that guy has to be over here, why this guy is over here. That's the idea behind Rosh Hashanah as well. The idea behind Rosh Hashanah is there's 2 days. The first day is when you daven for yourself. You daven selfishly. You say, what am I supposed to get out of Rosh Hashanah? The second day is your relationship with everybody else. What's your relationship as opposed to everybody else? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even if I don't deserve to be here for myself, that was the first day. Even if I don't deserve to be here, if I'm a Russia and the first day, the second day, let me be here for my kids. Let me be here for my wife. Let me be here for my parents. Let me be here for my brothers, for my sisters, for my friends, for my Rebbeim, for this. My Rebbe needs a Talmud. I need to be here for him. I need to be that Talmud for him. Let me be here because somebody else deserves to live and he needs somebody. So I want to be here just for that reason. That's the idea behind this Shira. Sometimes you get a solo. Sometimes you get a solo. Sometimes you get that violin solo and it's awesome or whatever it is. But sometimes you're just that guy with the triangle in the back who's just going ding, ding, ding. And you think like, well, what's that guy doing? But the whole shot behind the triangle is if you do it at the right time, you can't just ding, 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 ding. It doesn't sound right. But if you do it at the right time with everybody together, then you know when to ding. And then you know when you're fit. That's when you know when you're fit. That's the idea on the second one. Exactly. Just random cymbals hitting together is not a song. Nobody listens to a song and like, oh man, you gotta hear these cymbals. Nobody does that. But together with everything else, then it makes sense. Then it's all Shira. Then you understand it. That's the idea on the tone, and that's the idea on Rosh Hashanah. To understand that not only do I have a place in life, but even if I don't deserve a place in life, chas v'shalom, for whatever reason, I still have a place with other people. Let me be here because other people need me as well. That's the idea behind it. Alright guys, we're gonna stop with that. Have a good Shabbos.